Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to get into quite a story, a real international legal battle. The case is Kirch v. Liberty Media Corp. It's a Second Circuit decision from back in 2006, but this is so much more than just your average case, dusty old case file. This is, well, it's got it all, right? We've got a German media empire, we've got its dramatic collapse, and then we've got these huge American corporations stepping into the picture. And then on top of all that, you've got allegations of, well, basically corporate sabotage.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it boils down to. It gets pretty cutthroat. This case is, it really highlights, I think, how messy these international business disputes can get, especially when you have these accusations of, underhanded dealings. And the legal issues, they get pretty thorny too. We're talking defamation, tortious interference, and then this huge question of where a case like this should even be heard in the first place.
You know, where does a court even begin to untangle all of this? So let's start with the main player in all of this. We've got Dr. Leo Kirch and his company Kirch Group, and this was not a small operation.
No, not at all.
Kirch Group was huge. They held major TV rights, including Formula One. I mean, this was a real powerhouse in European media.
Yeah, definitely a dominant force in that landscape.
For sure. But then things took a turn in 2002. They Kirch Group hit a liquidity crisis, and this is where things start to get really interesting. So enter Rolf Ernst Brewer. He was the CEO of Deutsche Bank at the time, and he basically, well, he publicly questioned Kirch Group's financial stability, right? He kind of put it out there that the financial community, they'd probably think twice about lending Kirch Group any more money.
Yeah, and that's a, that kind of statement from someone like the CEO of Deutsche Bank, that's going to carry a lot of weight.
Oh, absolutely. And it seems like it had a pretty big impact because just 3 months after that statement, Kirch Group went under. So now, the core allegation here is that Liberty Media, which is this big American media company, and Deutsche Bank, they were actually working together, right? They were in cahoots to basically take Kirch Group down. And their alleged motive was to, well, it was to clear the path for Liberty Media to get its hands on some very valuable German cable assets.
Interesting. So almost like eliminating a competitor.
Yeah,
They'll
exactly.
make a swoop in.
You get rid of the competition.
I see, I see.
And and what really makes this even more intriguing is the timing of it all.
There you go.
Because while Kirch Group was struggling to stay afloat, Liberty Media, they were actually trying to acquire these German cable assets from Deutsche Telekom.
Ah, so the timing does seem awfully suspicious from a, at least from a purely circumstantial point of view.
And this definitely added fuel to the conspiracy theories. There were even these claims about secret meetings, involving the defendants and get this, Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, wow. So we're talking like real high-level players here?
So it was like a real, it was like something out of a spy movie, all this intrigue and
Oh, it's the cloak and dagger stuff.
yeah, exactly. So with all this happening with this fallen empire and these accusations flying around Kirch and some related entities, they decided to sue. And they filed their lawsuit in New York. And their claims included defamation, which is based on that statement by Brewer. They also alleged tortious interference, both with their existing contracts and with potential business deals. And then they also threw in a claim for civil conspiracy.
Wow, so they really went for it.
They did. But the district court that first heard the case, they weren't convinced. They dismissed all of Kirch's claims.
So what happened then?
Well, it didn't end there. The case went up to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
So another chance.
So let's break down some of the legal details here. We'll start with the defamation claim. Thinking about our listeners, especially the law students out there, what are the key things you need to prove to win a defamation case under New York law?
Okay, so under New York law, to prove defamation, you basically need to show that the statement in question, first of all, it has to be false, can't be true. Secondly, It has to be presented as facts, not just someone's opinion.
Right.
And finally, it has to be specifically about the plaintiff, the person suing, and it has to have harmed their reputation.
Okay, so three elements there.
Yeah, three main ones.
False, presented as fact, and directed at the plaintiff.
You got it.
Okay, so let's go back to that statement by Breuer.
Okay.
The one where he said, the financial community is unlikely to lend more money to Kirch.
Right.
Now, the defense, their argument was that this wasn't a statement of fact. Right. It was just Breuer's, you know, opinion about how the market might react.
I see.
So legally speaking, why is that distinction between fact and opinion so important?
Well, because in New York, and this is a pretty fundamental principle, pure opinion, as they call it, is totally protected under the law.
Okay.
So the court had to figure out whether Breuer was stating something that could be proven true or false.
Right.
Or if he was just, you know, sharing his thoughts or predictions about what might happen in the financial world.
Right.
And to make things even more, more complicated.
Yeah.
That original statement, it was in German.
Right.
And it was made to a German audience.
Uh-huh.
So the court also had to consider, you know, how the statement would have been understood in that specific cultural context.
Yeah, yeah, the translation and all of that.
Exactly, because the way something is interpreted can definitely change depending on the language and the culture involved.
Right, right. It's not always a straightforward, word-for-word thing.
Yep, not at all.
Okay, so moving on from defamation, let's talk about those tortious interference claims.
Right.
We mentioned that there were two types. Interference with contracts that already existed.
Yep.
And then interference with potential future business deals.
Right.
So walk us through those.
Okay. So for the tortious interference with an existing contract claim.
Yeah.
Kirch had to prove a few things. They had to show that there was a specific contract in place, a real valid contract.
Okay.
And that the defendants, that they intentionally did something to cause one of the parties to break that contract.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to show that the defendants didn't have a good reason for doing that.
Okay.
You know, they weren't justified. And finally, they had to show that the breach, the broken contract, actually caused them, you know, financial harm.
So they had to, like, connect the dots, right? Show exactly how the defendant's actions led to a specific contract being broken.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the problem was the court found that Kirch couldn't point to any specific contract that was actually broken because of something that Liberty Media or Deutsche Bank did.
Mm.
They couldn't provide that level of detail.
Oh, I see. So it's not enough to just say, you know, my business suffered.
Right.
You have to be able to say this specific agreement, this contract, was broken because of what the defendant did.
Exactly. And that's a really important takeaway for law students.
Yeah.
You got to have that specificity, that concrete evidence of harm.
Makes sense. So what about the second type of tortious interference, the one with potential business deals?
Right. So that's tortious interference with prospective economic advantage.
Okay.
That's the legal term. And it deals with interfering with, you know, business relationships that haven't been finalized yet, future possibilities.
Right.
But to win on this claim, Kirch had to prove that the defendants used what the law calls improper means.
Improper means. Okay, so what does that actually mean in this kind of situation?
Well, it usually refers to things like fraud, lying about something,
mm-hmm.
or misrepresentation, you know, presenting something falsely.
Okay.
Or it could be economic coercion, using your financial power to force someone to do something.
Mm.
Now, Kirch, they argued that Deutsche Bank, because they were such a big creditor, that they basically used that power to block Kirch Group from getting financing from anywhere else.
Okay.
But the court, they said, nope, that's too vague.
Hmm.
They said Kirch didn't provide enough specific facts to support those allegations.
So again, it comes back to that that need for specific details.
It does. It does. Details matter.
Okay. So it seems like, you know, across all of these tort claims, the recurring theme is you need that hard evidence.
Yeah. You can't just make general accusations.
Right. You got to be specific.
Got to back it up.
Okay. So what about that civil conspiracy claim? It seems like, you know, if there was a coordinated effort to bring Kirch Group down, that's where you'd really see it, right?
Right, you'd think so. But here's the thing. In New York, civil conspiracy, it's not actually a separate, independent tort.
Oh, okay.
You can't just sue for conspiracy on its own.
Mm.
You first have to have a valid underlying tort, like, you know, defamation or tortious interference.
Right.
And since those other claims, they mostly failed at the district court level because Kirch didn't have enough specific evidence.
Yeah.
Well, the conspiracy claim failed too.
Oh, I see. So the conspiracy claim, it's like, it needs something else to hold on to.
Yeah, exactly. It's parasitic, legally speaking.
Okay, interesting. So you mentioned earlier that the Second Circuit sent part of the case back to the district court.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like they said, okay, retry everything.
No, no, not at all.
So what exactly did they send back?
They sent back the defamation claim and the prospective interference claim.
Okay.
But they didn't say whether the district court was right or wrong in its original decision.
Mm.
They sent them back with a specific instruction.
Okay.
They said the district court needed to first look at something called forum non-convenience.
Forum non-convenience. Now, that's probably not a term that most of our listeners are familiar with.
Probably not.
Can you break that down for us? You know, what does it mean, especially in this case?
Sure, sure. So forum non-convenience, it's basically a legal principle that lets a court dismiss a case if they think there's a better, more appropriate court somewhere else that should handle it.
Okay.
So think about this case, right? You've got German plaintiffs, a German company that went bankrupt, a statement made in German,
mm-hmm.
and most of the witnesses and the evidence, they're probably in Germany too. So the Second Circuit, they were basically saying to the district court, hold on a minute. Even if these claims could be valid under New York law, is New York really the best place to deal with this?
Right.
You know, it's a dispute that's at its core a German dispute.
Yeah.
So the Second Circuit wanted the district court to think about which court is best equipped to handle the case fairly and efficiently.
Ah, so it's not just about whether a court has the power to hear a case. It's about whether it's the right place to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, considering things like convenience for everyone involved and whose law should apply.
Exactly. And the Second Circuit, they specifically said, deal with this forum non-convenience issue first.
Oh.
Figure out if New York is even the right place for this case before you get into all the complexities of applying New York law to a statement made in German about a German company.
Yeah, it's like they were saying, don't get bogged down in the details before you figure out if you're even in the right ballpark.
Yeah, exactly. It's about efficiency, about making sure things are handled in a way that's fair to everyone.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So for our listeners, and especially for those who are in law school, what are the big lessons we can take away from Kirch v. Liberty Media Corp?
Well, there are a few key takeaways.
Yeah.
First of all, this case really shows how important it is to be specific when you're making legal claims.
Okay.
You can't just throw out vague accusations. You have to provide detailed facts.
Uh-huh.
You have to explain exactly how a contract was breached or what specific actions were taken that were improper. And the fact that several of Kirch's claims were dismissed, well, that just highlights how crucial it is to have those specific details in your complaint.
Yeah, you've got to have that roadmap, right? That clear, detailed account of what happened.
Exactly. No hand-waving allowed. The second big takeaway is it's about the nuances of defamation law.
Okay.
It's really important to understand the difference between a statement of fact and a statement of opinion, especially when you're dealing with international cases,
yeah.
where language and culture can really change how something is understood.
For sure.
And it's important to remember that in New York, pure opinion, it's strongly protected.
Yeah, that's a key point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, the third takeaway, it's about forum non-convenience.
Okay.
That's a crucial concept in international litigation. In this case, it shows how courts might prioritize deciding where a dispute should be heard.
Right.
Especially when you've got foreign parties involved and events that mostly happened outside the court's jurisdiction.
It's about finding the most logical and efficient place for the case to be heard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not just about whether a court can hear a case, it's about whether it should.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And just to reiterate for those who are focused on New York law. Remember, civil conspiracy, it's not a standalone tort.
Right. It needs a valid tort to stand on.
Yeah, you got to have that foundation.
Absolutely. And the Second Circuit actually made that point even clearer when they upheld the dismissal of the tortious interference with contract claim and all those claims from ITTC because they didn't have all the necessary elements. You know, they didn't plead their case properly.
Right. So they didn't meet the requirements.
Exactly. So, you know, looking at this case as a whole, it really sets a high bar for proving these kinds of business torts.
Yeah.
Especially when you're alleging that someone intentionally did something wrong and caused major financial damage.
Right.
And it also shows just how important it is to think about where a lawsuit should be filed.
Uh-huh.
Especially when you've got all these international players and events involved.
Yeah. Jurisdiction is key. It is.
It is.
So, big picture, this this case, Courage v. Liberty Media, it's a fascinating story, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got international intrigue.
Absolutely.
It's got guys, big business players.
High stakes.
Yeah, high stakes. And it's also a really great example of some crucial legal principles. Mm. You know, for anyone who's interested in business law and litigation that crosses borders.
Yeah. I mean, it really shows how the legal system has to deal with the realities of global business.
Right.
And that sometimes those procedural issues, like jurisdiction, they can be just as important as the actual legal arguments themselves.
Absolutely. So to wrap things up, here's a final thought for our listeners to ponder. Given that business is only becoming more global, how do you think those principles of jurisdiction, you know, things like forum non-convenience,
right,
and those always present challenges of communicating and interpreting things across different cultures and languages.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think all of that will affect these kinds of legal battles in the future?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, it's a complex landscape that's constantly evolving. And I think we're only going to see more and more of these types of cases as businesses continue to operate on a global scale.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. So thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Courage v. Liberty Media.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been great having you here. And to all our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And we'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.